Hello, brothers and sisters. Welcome to Pagan Chaos Magic Podcast, Episode 6. It's 6:30 in the morning, and I was not expecting to be up at this time in the morning. This is Kaya Dragon, your host, and my son had a terrible night of discomfort. He had some incredibly bad colic, which doesn't get too often, but every once in a while it wakes him up in the middle of the night screaming. And tonight at 3 a.m., that's exactly what happened. Unfortunately, he's feeling better. And back down to sleep with my wife, and I'm up. So, good time to catch up on my podcast. I have no excuse for not having my show notes updated, other than to mention the fact that just because I'm unemployed doesn't mean I haven't found an amazing amount of things to fill my time lately. I was expecting to have all of this time to do stuff, and yet I'm finding ways to consume it rather rapidly. Though I have a nice dent in that basement, I gotta keep that going as long as possible. This is going to be a little bit of a different show. A lot of different things to talk about. A couple of topics. But before we even get into any of that, I want to throw a song out there to set the mood for the show. I want to say thanks to Gaia Consort for letting me play your stuff. Thank you, Chris. There's a tune out there called Every Sacred Thing off the Secret Voices album. What you're going to hear is one of my favorite songs by Gaia Consort. Every word of this tune, every bit of it, reminds me so much of how I feel about the puritanical nature of not only the world we live in, but especially this country that I'm sitting in the USA. And it reminds me so much how we started out as Puritans and haven't left it far behind. Here it is, Gaia Consort, Every Sacred Thing.
Of the breast on the big screen, but no penetration or spark. Cut the claw from the tiger, defang the cobra, so we can feel safe in the dark. Big money makes the decisions, big money owns all the gods. And I can't help but laugh at the puzzled expression when I say I won't give to the cause. And is it any wonder something inside us dies? Is it any wonder that the spirit cries when we sterilize every sacred thing? Paved over meadows for strip malls or misguided notions of bliss. And I point to the universe, shaking their shoulders, saying, how can you need more than this? 5,000 years of repression, 5,000 years of the lie. And I can't help but hoping as I'm watching the changes that maybe we're watching it die. Hurricane's coming, or maybe it's just a soft rain. And I don't have the answers, but every part of my being is laughing or crying or screaming for change. And is it any wonder that the spirit cries? Is it any wonder something inside us dies when we sanitize every sacred thing? Every sacred thing, every sacred thing, every sacred thing, every sacred thing, secret thing. Every secret thing.
Great tune. Alright, I've been struggling a lot here trying to figure out how to discuss Chaos Magic without giving an entire course in magic, which really, that's not my thing, and there are plenty of other podcasts out there that do a much better job. But there's going to be a few things about my worldview I'm going to have to explain, so I'm going to give it to you in a couple of bites, different segments on the show, and the first one I'm going to talk about today is the very first monotheistic religion as far as we understand it, which is Zoroastrianism. I'm going to pronounce that wrong a couple of times. I'll also get it right a few times, but Zoroastrianism is the oldest monotheist religion as far as modern science and historians acknowledge. Most people haven't heard of Zoroastrianism. If you want a connection to modern day, for those of you who were Freddie Mercury fans, the lead singer for the band Queen, who died a few years ago, his parents were Zoroastrianists. He, Freddie Mercury, had a Zoroastrianist's, if that's how you pronounce it, funeral. There's only about, I believe, 200,000 worshippers, I read, at this point in time. The interesting thing about Zoroastrianism is it predated the Jews, it predated the Christians, and it predated the Muslims. And it was a monotheistic belief. As a matter of fact, the British scholar Mary Boyce, she just died in 2006, but she's a scholar of Iranian languages, and Iran is modern-day what Persia was, same spot. Mary Boyce was and is a recognized authority on Zoroastrianism, said this quote, "Zoroastrianism is the oldest of the revealed world religions, and it has probably had more influence on mankind, directly and indirectly, than any other single faith." Mary Boyce, actually, if you want to check out more about her, there's a very good link off of Wikipedia under the Zoroastrianism link. But if you are having a hard time spelling that and Google's not giving you a break on the spelling and suggesting the right word, go for Mary Boyce in your Google search. Mary, M-A-R-Y, Boyce, B-O-Y-C-E. There'll be a link to this in the show notes, but Mary Boyce is the scholar that we're going to base what I'm going to talk to you about. Religioustolerance.org is where I've got most of this information from. There'll be a link to that on my show notes. They have a very nice and simple summation of why Zoroastrianism is important. It's not just that this was the first religion to identify a monotheistic theme where all religions, as far as we understand up till that point, were polytheistic, or many gods. Zoroaster is the most commonly known name of the prophet-poet who began this religion. He's also known as Zarathustra, or Zartost in Persia, modern-day Iran, depending on which language and area you're driving from. He, interestingly enough, and I can't find this link on the internet, but I know I have found this in the past. I think it was a Discovery Channel special. Zoroaster, when he came about with his religious philosophy and started the religion, got his visions from God, apparently by consuming very large chunks of hashish orally, which is actually the most healthy way to partake of that. And if you take a large enough dose of hashish orally, you will go to another place. Whether you consider that a hallucination, a drug experience, or a travel to the astral plane, Zoroaster went out there, and he came back with this religion, in which there was, for the first time in history, as far as we understand it, one good god, known as Uhuru Mazda, and one bad god in opposition to Uhuru Mazda, who is known as Angra Mainyu, or Middle Persian equivalent is Ahriman, and which you may have heard before. Now, back in the days when I was first doing, when I first started doing some research into Zoroastrianism, I remember referencing back at the time to a really great animated series called Alexander. I don't know if any of you have seen it. I think it was on the Sci-Fi Channel. It was kind of a almost a surrealistic take on Alexander the Great. And, of course, there's a lot of stuff in the story of the in the animation that didn't take place in real life. As far as we know, they didn't have things like some of the robots and automated war machines that you see in the series. But a lot of the plot actually follows a good deal of truth of what was happening in the religion of the time. There is a clash between Zoroastrianism, the cult of Pythagoras, which was a real actual cult. And, well, a cult is a bad word. We'll just call it a religious sect from Greece. And several other players in it. Most of the names, as far as I could research out of that animation, were the actual companions of Alexander the Great, including Ptolemy, who eventually succeeded him as emperor. The funny thing about this is it isn't just the one god, one devil theory that is first presented here in Zoroastrianism. There is a large other section that the Jews, Christians, and Muslims mirror in Zoroastrianism. The beliefs concerning God and Satan, or a good God and a bad God, heaven and hell, the virgin birth of the Savior, slaughter of the innocents, resurrection, the final judgment, were all derived from Zoroastrianism. That's the prevailing theory, and if you want to get furious about it, that's fine, but now keep in mind, everybody knows and is willing to admit, by looking at history, monotheist or not, that the Jews, as far as we know, were the first monotheists, followed by the Christians, then followed by the Muslims. That's a simple timeline. They're all children of Abraham, because Abraham is where it all sprang from, according to the holy books of the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims. The Jews believe they are still the chosen people of Abraham. The Christians believe the Jews fell away from the proper laid down laws of God, and Christ came to redeem all mankind from the mistakes that had happened, and the Jews were no longer the chosen people. And then I believe it's 600 or 700 years later, the Muslims came along and say, no, you Christians have got it wrong, and the Jews definitely have it wrong. Gabriel has given us a revelation. Here's our book, the Quran, told to us through Muhammad. We've got it right. Well, if you dig in the history long enough, then you find out there was someone before all three of these, which was Zoroastrianism. So think about that, you monotheists. I have no objection to your beliefs. Christian mages are some of my favorite people. You're amazingly fun to talk to, and because you're so conflicted so often, I would really love to someday meet a Christian mage who I can have a conversation with for an hour who doesn't contradict themselves. And I do not mean that as an insult. I do not mean that at all. I'm sure there are some out there. I just haven't met them yet. And that could be because a lot of the Christian mages I've met are new to magic and haven't quite let go of what was beaten into their heads as children. So they're still conflicted in many ways. They haven't found the path yet. So that doesn't mean, please, that doesn't mean a monotheistic mage isn't any more valid than any others. And I love you all. But keep in mind that, you know, the Jews, Christ, and Muhammad weren't the first cats on this planet to talk about one God, one devil. That started with Zoroaster. Before that, it was polytheistic. That is not only a timeline I generally embrace and understand is true, it also, as a matter of fact, makes a nice clean dividing line between where polytheism existed and where monotheism started. Now, that also, being a chaos mage, also, I happen to believe in these monotheistic gods. I just don't believe they're the only ones. They present themselves as the only ones, but that's, in my opinion, nothing more than spiritual politics. An example. The book of Revelation at the end of the New Testament, the Christian Bible, speaks of the final days, Armageddon, the apocalypse, where there will be the great battle where God will finally smite the devil for 1,000 years and bind him up, and at the end of the 1,000 years release him to cause trouble upon the earth again, and then finally cast him for all eternity into the lake of fire, the second death. In other words, he axes Satan for all time. And, of course, then the universe lives in peace and harmony under the one true God. Well, yeah. But keep in mind, history's written by the victors, and that battle hasn't happened yet. So, now you can believe the spiritual propaganda that God, Yahweh, Jehovah, whoever you want to talk about, is going to win that war. Or you can believe the propaganda coming from the small cadre of Satanists out there who say, well, no, our cat's going to win. Personally, I don't want any part of that war. My goddess isn't interested in it, and I'm not interested in it either. Doesn't mean it won't affect me. See, the funny thing about chaos magic and coming to an understanding of my belief in the thought forms and the astral plane and how the human mind interacts with the gods only convinces me all the more strongly that all of these gods exist, even if some are trying to be bullies and hog the whole pie. That's fine. You know, they exist. And they're nothing more than spiritual politicians. And there are good politicians, and there are bad politicians. And there are good-hearted politicians who couldn't speak their way out of a paper bag. And there are evil and corrupt politicians who give some of the most fantastic speeches in the world. There are those who are dedicated to public service to the betterment of mankind, and there are those who are dedicated to public service for the betterment of their own pocket. It's no different with the gods, in my opinion. There are good ones, there are bad ones. They all serve a purpose, and it would be nice if we could get along without them, I think, sometimes, but that's just not possible at this stage in history. So, I just wanted to make that point about Zoroastrianism. If you haven't heard of it before, I really recommend you look it up. Study it a little bit. The concept of the conflicting two poles, the yin and the yang, becoming God and Satan. The concept of the soul. The concept of a heaven and a hell. The concept of a virgin birth of the Savior. Did you notice that one? Not unique to the Christians, not at all. As a matter of fact, if you do enough research in pagan philosophies, polytheistic cultures, many of the saviors from those times came from a virgin birth. I've always been trying to figure out why this virgin birth is so important to not only the monotheistic cultures, but a lot of the polytheistic cultures. You can find the stories of resurrection, final judgment, and virgin birth, I believe, goes all the way back to Sumerian myths, and that's as far back as we can go, because we don't have a time machine. Sumerians were the first guys who wrote it down that we found. There may be older stuff, but we haven't found it yet. Alright, let's play some more music, talk about something else. Let's see. I'm going to play something by Emma Wallace from the PodSafe Music Network, which is a great service. If you're a podcaster, I recommend you go check it out. These are all songs that have been released to be used on podcasts. You don't have to pay a royalty on them. The artists are looking for the exposure and the links back to where they might, you know, the audience can purchase the stuff if they like it. This is by Emma Wallace. I first heard it on a podcast that perhaps it's faded. There hasn't been one in quite a while. I hope someday it comes back. It's called Catnip Brew. I think there was 8 or 9 episodes before it stopped. And very smart lady on that podcast. And she would play one tune usually per podcast. And I heard this one and fell in love with it. Because if there was if there was a good description of my wife, she loves this tune. But I have mentioned before, I'm a dominant kind of an alpha male. And when you are, you tend to attract females who respond to alpha males. Now, that doesn't mean I think that all women should respond to me as an alpha male. There's alpha females out there, too. Great for you, sisters. There's alpha females of the straight, gay, and bisexual persuasion. And I love sitting down with those girls and drinking and talking. We're not going to get into a relationship because we don't have opposites. We don't offer it what the other one wants. But girls who do respond to alpha males reminds me very much of the words and lyrics in this tune. Emma Wallace, if she's singing this tune, I don't know if this is how she personally feels about her love life, but the woman who is presented in the music is exactly the sort of woman that I seem to end up with in many ways. Spiritual, wanting to attain higher levels of enlightenment, but when it comes to the bedroom, as Emma puts it, she's not looking for a Buddha. She's looking for a Genghis Khan.
Another great tune.
Thanks a lot, Catnip Brew, for introducing me to that tune, and Emma Wallace. That's a really good album, and I tend to order the hard copy CD soon if I can't find the entire album just as an MP3 download. I think I might be able to. I got to do a little hunting. It's as Darkly Faye has mentioned on her podcast, The Dark Side of Faye, and it's an opinion I 100% agree with. If you can order the music in an MP3 format, not only in many cases where more of the money go to the artist, especially if you order it from the artist's website, it's just going to be better on the environment. It's a little less plastic in the system, folks. How many CD cases have we pitched in our life? How many CDs have gotten scratched? It is true that an MP3 download can be lost if your hard drive crashes, but really, you know, at least in my neighborhood, I can go to a Best Buy, and for about, I think at this point, $150, I can get a terabyte backup drive. A terabyte's pretty huge, guys. I would like to see anybody who had a laptop or other computer that's got more than a terabyte of storage that they need to back up. It's really easy. You drop the CD in, it runs its own program, it clones your entire drive, and in the future, if anything crashes, you replace your hard drive, you hook up your backup drive, and you say restore, and voila, everything is exactly as it was, including all your music. So I'm going to be looking for that on MP3 download if I can find it. Okay, another controversial subject here, and this one's probably going to stir the pot a little more than the last one. Guns. I know that many of my Canadian listeners are going to disagree with me here. Some of the best pagan podcasts come out of Canada. I love Canada. I've seriously considered emigrating more than once. Really thought about it more than once. I spent more than a few days of my youth in Windsor, and I spent an entire summer as a bricklayer's assistant as a teenager out in a little town called Dunnsville in Canada, which is about 45 minutes out of Niagara Falls, which was why I was living there, because when you're, you know, 18 years old, 19 years old, working your butt off, going down to Niagara Falls and walking the strip is a great way to, you know, see the girls and be seen by the girls and strike up a few conversations. Everything from wax museums to you name it. Bars, restaurants, great long hill that rolls down to the falls, and there's a long strip to take a walk on. In Canada, you can get firearms, but it is more difficult. United States is actually quite famous for making it easy to get firearms. While you could say as the years have gone by, my politics has shifted left, not so much for the virtues of the left, but more along the lines because of the excesses of the right in my country. But one of the things that has always bothered me about the left was the nearly religious fanatical devotion to gun control. The kind of fanaticism I see amongst my Democratic friends, Democratic being the party name in the United States, versus my Republican friends being the other party in the United States, Democrats being the left-leaning party, and the Republicans being the right-leaning party, who recently finally fell out of power, is that Democrats tend to want to control or remove all access to guns from private citizens, and Republicans want to remove restrictions on that. This is one of the few times I'm going to swing with the right, folks, and I'm going to explain to you why. And it is not because I'm a bloodthirsty man. It's not because I'm a gun nut. There's a couple of core principles that you really, really should consider here if you have an opinion that guns are bad and you shouldn't have anything to do with them. There are circumstances where guns shouldn't be there. I mean, if somebody in your family has a history of mental illness, or violence, especially mental illness mixed with violence, you know, an open gun cabinet is not the way to go, folks. Have you been in jail for violent crimes? Have you used a firearm in the commission of a crime? I don't really have a problem with the state denying you access to more firearms. I'm talking about private everyday citizens who have not committed crimes and who are no threat to anyone. There's a reason to have those guns, and there's a couple of reasons I'll state, and I want to talk about this from the magical perspective, because this is not a political program. But understand, mages, friends, shamans, everyone out there, yes, guns are a scary, scary tool, but so is magic. The philosophy that I hear most preached is guns kill people. And that's true. Guns kill people. They are a tool for killing things and shooting targets. And the shooting targets is the practice for the killing things. It's just like military is very simple to describe. The military has two functions: kill people and break things. Guns have a function: kill people and break things. Killing people is what they're purposed for, and they're more than capable of producing enough kinetic energy to break objects as well. So, if guns kill people, we don't want to kill people. Let's ban the guns. That kind of seems logical, doesn't it? Well, hold on. Let's think about this for a second. The majority of people who have guns use them in a lawful manner. Only outlaws use guns in a non-lawful manner. Okay. Well, let's switch gears here. The internet, even though it is used by the vast majority of citizens as a legal tool and a method of receiving such things as this podcast, for instance, also gives a small minority of the world public access to child pornography. Now, child pornography is universally banned throughout the world. And I don't disagree with that. If you, I am really, nearly militantly free speech, and I have a real issue with anybody attacking art. But child pornography is a special case. So the internet gives access to outlaws to child pornography. Well, then why don't we ban the internet? I mean, really, honestly, to protect people. We don't want children to be exploited, and we certainly don't want to allow that exploitation to be broadcast to others who might be excited by it and then go out and harm other children. By all means, let's ban the internet. Or let's take another example, perhaps not so harsh or controversial. Obesity is on the rise, and it's been linked to, by more than a few studies, to our overconsumption of television, which limits our exercise, and our bad eating habits. Now, obesity increases diabetes, kills many young, and is a huge burden on our medical system, because a person with diabetes, and I'm not knocking anyone with diabetes. My father developed it late in life, type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is when you're born with it. Diabetes, though, is most the epidemic in the United States, at least, and in places like Tonga and other countries, is that the excess of calories and the lack of exercise lead to obesity, which leads to type 2 diabetes, which leads to, at that point, a lifelong medical monitoring process by which you must constantly monitor your blood sugar so as not to become ill, so as not to fall into a coma, so as not to lose limbs. I know a lot of people don't understand. They think that they can, diabetes, no big deal. What happens? I get, an insulin pill or an insulin shot, I'll be fine. Diabetes leads to things like amputations of limbs. It leads to the loss of sight. It leads to wounds not healing for sometimes years at a time. So, by all means, then, let's ban television. It causes obesity. It causes disease. Let's get rid of it. Do you understand the comparison I'm trying to make here? Guns kill people, so ban the guns. No, guns are a tool that can be improperly used. We don't ban the tool. We control the tool. Doesn't mean I think you should get a machine gun. Machine guns have been illegal in the United States for a long time, and if I see one more television program where a guy goes to a gun store, picks up a gun, walks out, pulls the trigger, and it goes rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, until he empties the clip, I'm going to scream. Fully automatic firearms, folks. Oh, cat, yeah, came to visit. Say hi. Okay. Fully automatic firearms, folks, have been illegal to the civilian population for, I think, going on 50 years. You cannot purchase legally a weapon in the United States that will fire more than one bullet per trigger pull. So, there's no going into the gun store, picking up a gun, and walking out and going, bah! And mowing your enemies down. No. That is a really ridiculous presentation made from the far left, the anti-gun crowd, that is every bit as ridiculous as some of the anti-abortion stuff I've seen come out. It rabid in its idiocy. Like I said, internet gives access to child porn. Ban the internet. No. The internet is a tool. And like tools such as guns, it can be misused. So what do? We make laws against special cases like child porn. That is something that will put you away in almost any country on the planet. Now, whether or not you agree with that doesn't make the point. The point is most of the people who are listening to me right now, as a matter of fact, I hope all of the people that are listening to me right now have no interest in underage sex. But it's a serious issue. Yet we don't ban the internet because it gives access to some limited perverted people. And hey, I like most perverts, but that one crosses the line. We don't ban television because it causes obesity, medical bills, and early death, even though the medical system in the United States is under huge strain and is one of the biggest social issues of our time. So that tool, when it's being misused, really, that's our responsibility in our own lives to regulate it. As a matter of fact, it is our responsibility in our own lives to regulate all of those. Guns, internet, television, any other tool that can be misused. Now, why do I think that tool, guns, should be made available to the civilian population? Well, multiple reasons. And some of them are as realistic as they get, and some of you aren't going to want to believe them. Rule number one, bullets are faster than spells. That's just the way it is, folks. Spells are very, very effective and can do things that guns couldn't possibly ever accomplish. Political power comes from the barrel of the gun, as Chairman Mao once said, and he was sure right about that one, if not a lot else. But real change comes from magic. You know, use the right tool for the right job. And if someone is coming at you with a gun, your response shouldn't be to draw a pentagram in the air, form a circle, and do a banishment, because it's just not going to stop that bullet. If you know of a mage, or you are a mage, or otherwise energy magical worker who can stop a bullet, I want to meet you. Because, really, you've got a lot to teach me. But it ain't been happening yet. There are guns out there in the hands of people who are evil. Most police officers are very good people. I've met police officers that are downright evil. Most are trying to do a good job for the betterment of their community, for the betterment of their local fellow man, and they ain't getting paid nearly enough for putting their life on the line. So, please understand, I'm not a cop hater, but I've sure met some dirty, dirty cops. And if those who are in power and in possession of guns that are far outclassed. I mean, you got to understand, folks, for the last 15 years in the United States of America, police stations have been getting surplus equipment from the military. There's not a major city in the United States of America where the police department does not have a cache of fully automatic M16 assault weapons, grenades, both flashbang and fragmentation, and various other military hardware, including night vision goggles and other equipment that you can only get from military stocks. Now, there has been a militarization of our police. Well, the police won't be coming for me anytime soon because I'm not breaking any laws, but I am a, well, I guess you could call me a relatively public pagan. And there was a time not so long ago that you are all familiar with, I'm sure, where, well, people like me were called witches and burned. Well, folks, the world changes quickly. Spins fast, and destiny can turn on a dime. That's actually a line from a song I'm going to play very, very soon here, from Chalice and Blade. Just, man, it's a great line, because destiny can turn on a dime. And the world and everything around you can change tomorrow. And if they ever come looking for me to put me on a stake, well, I can assure you I'm not going out without a fight. Doesn't mean I'm the kind of guy looking for a fight. I've actually had the opportunity to blow a man away. And not too many people get that opportunity in life, so let me explain it to you. I possess three weapons in my life. I have a 45 Glock, I have a 12-gauge shotgun, and I have an AK-47 semi-automatic, fully legal rifle. Now, my shotgun and my rifle are, of course, locked away. But earlier in my life, when I didn't have kids to worry about in my house, my 45 was kept on top of my bookshelf. Several years ago, I was in, I think, 2002, and I was going through a period, the other period of being laid off in my life, and I had just dropped off my girlfriend, who became my wife, to her job. She was working the night shift at a hospital, and I returned home about 11:30. I knew I wasn't going to be able to fall asleep for a couple of hours, so I sat down in front of the computer in my front room, and I was cruising the net, and I heard a rustling coming from my kitchen, which was around the corner from where I was sitting. I was thinking to myself, man, the cat is making an awful lot of noise. An awful lot of noise. So I kind of leaned back in my chair. Yeah. Now, keep in mind, I'm home alone, so frankly, folks, I'm half-dressed. You know, I dropped my pants and, you know, boxers. And I thought, man, that cat's making so much noise. The cat was not in the kitchen. The cat was actually in the same room as me, looking into the kitchen, wondering what all that damn noise is about as well. So I leaned back further to actually look in the kitchen. And there, standing about 10 feet away from my seat, was a man at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, in the middle of my kitchen. A man I'd never seen before, and who had broken in through the back. But here in the United States of America, and very specifically where I live, there's a simple law that if somebody breaks into your house and you shoot them, it's considered self-defense. No one can do anything to you if someone breaks into your house and you kill them there. Now, if you shoot them, they run away and get out of your house, they can sue you. That's an odd little section of the law that I'm not even going to go into the ridiculousness of. But I see the argument. So, I'm there, middle of the night, man I've never seen, standing in my kitchen, rustling around through my kitchen, looking, not seeing me yet. And my 45 is about 3 feet from my hand. Now, I knew at that point I simply could have reached over, slid the slide on my 45 back to load one bullet into the chamber, and blown that man away. Everything kind of moved in slow motion, and the decision came to me as, do you want to kill this man? And no, I didn't want to kill the man. As a matter of fact, I didn't see a need to. Physically, he wasn't my size. I could not see him carrying any weapons, though I could not see all of them because he was behind a counter. And I decided that there was no particular reason to shed blood. My reaction was to stand up. I'm sure the nearly naked part of me standing up and jumping out scared him as much as anything else, and to scream at him in a very loud voice, "What the fuck are you doing in my house?" And to proceed at a loud, loud voice to continue shouting at him as I stood up, this half-naked man, and he was absolutely petrified. At that point, I had seized control of the situation. Now, my .45 was very close at hand. If he had suddenly produced a weapon, I would have reached to the top of my bookshelf and shot the man to death. Those are hollow point bullets in that gun. They're hollow point bullets for two reasons. If I have to fire it and I miss, it won't go through my house and into my neighbors. Hollow point bullets tend to fragment much more completely when going through a wall. The second is, a hollow point bullet will kill a man or a woman in very, very short order, because it has a tendency to tear a very large hole in their bodies, larger than any normal bullet. And as I said, I chose not to use deadly force. So, you want to think I'm a gun nut? Fine. You want to think I'm bloodthirsty? Fine. But in my life, I've proven to myself that I didn't need to. I just stood up and started screaming at the guy. He froze in fear. Now, I don't really have much of a nudity taboo, other than the fact that I don't necessarily like displaying my body when I'm not in the best of shape, but... So I continued to shout at him, and by the time the incident was over, I was walking him out my front door while he gave me a drunken bullshit story about how his buddies had dropped him off and he walked into the wrong house. I didn't believe him. I'm fairly sure he was there to rob me. But what if he had been drunk? Well, he was drunk. That I could smell on his breath. But what if it had been a simple misunderstanding and I had shed his blood? That's something that I'm not sure I could have redeemed myself from. So, don't think me a gun nut. Think of me as a man who understands that there may be a day where the torch-bearing mob comes to my front door. And when they try to kick in that door, I will defend my family with every tool at my disposal. And I'm not ever, ever going to take my gun out of my house and go decide to make a difference in the world by assassinating anyone, by killing people anywhere. It is simply a means of defense. So I'm just asking you to think carefully, brothers and sisters. You may not approve of guns, and that's fine. You may choose not to own a gun, and that is fine. But I'd like you to consider the example of a group I ran across on the internet called the Pink Pistols. I'm a very pansexual-friendly guy. I'm not actually a pansexual person myself. Don't get me wrong, I'm really open-minded, but some things I'm not interested in partaking of. But, you know, if everybody's over the age of consent and agreeing, you guys go ahead and do whatever you want to do. Now, I got a lot of gay, bisexual, and lesbian friends. And more than a few transgender friends, though I haven't seen too much of them lately. They moved out of the state. But the Pink Pistols are a group of gays and lesbians, bisexuals and transgenders, that are a gun club. They get together regularly and learn to shoot their firearms properly and safely at gun ranges. They learn the safety rules, and if they have available in their area a concealed weapons permit program, they enter it lawfully, legally, and obtain one. They are not a group of fags who are going to be bashed, if you'll excuse the slang. These people impress me. These are normally what so many people would consider a left-wing group, and stereotypical lefts hate guns. No. These are some smart people who know that a great deal of the society that has repressed homosexuals like to go out and gay bash. I'm sorry, I may have said this before, but if you go out and beat up a gay person because they're gay, guess what? Dude or lady, more often dude, you're gay. You are a repressed homosexual. You are a self-hating homosexual or lesbian. And if you want to debate that face-to-face, feel free to email me at kayadragon@gmail.com. Now, gay bashing tends to be something that happens in the gay male community, well, to the gay male community, from the so-called heterosexual community. Well, that's fine. I can sit here and call every gay basher out there a homosexual, and it won't make any difference when that gay basher is confronting the gay man on the street. Gay bashers usually come in groups, and the gays usually are in one or two. Now, you know what the really equalizer in that point is? Pulling out a gun, pointing it at the gay bashers, and saying, go the hell away. If you do want to do a little Google foo, you could pull up some articles on Pink Pistols and stories of how some of their members have been followed to their cars out of gay bars by groups of men with baseball bats. He opened up his car door, pulled out his gun, and explained to them what was going to happen if the day did not leave. And they scattered. That man didn't have to fire a shot. There are segments of the population all over the world that will oppress the weak, that will oppress the different, that will oppress the minority. And as much as I hate to admit it, as much as it sometimes detests me, there is no other answer sometimes but physical violence. That is the importance of the warrior. There are professional warriors. They're called soldiers, and I have the highest respect for them. But you can be a warrior in your own life. Defend your life. Defend your family. Defend your home. So, I'd like you to think about that. You hate guns? Think about them as a tool, as a purpose. In my opinion, nearly every pagan on the planet should be armed. Because bullets work faster than spells. Now, I don't mean to use that comparison to tell you to go pick up a gun and make a change in the world. What I mean is, make a change in your world through magic. Defend your world through whatever tools are necessary. And in our world, right now, that may mean a powerful firearm. Some days, someday, maybe all that will change. I would love to see that day. Okay, let's mix this up a little bit. Throw some more music in. Enough with the heavy gun stuff. Because I know I'm not going to have convinced everybody, but really would kind of like people to understand where I'm coming from on that. And maybe change a mind or three. It's the best you can hope for. But I'm going to play a little Chalice and Blade. Mojo from the Wigglian Way was involved with this group for many years. Chalice and Blade had unfortunately disbanded, I guess, in 2008. I hear they're all still good friends, which is the best way a band can end their time together. They remind me a lot of groups of friends at Renaissance festivals and at pagan gatherings who will pull out a guitar, get together, and sing some great tunes. They have that spirit of the common man sitting around with their friends and sharing a beautiful spiritual musical experience without, you know, huge concert halls. This is a personal kind of an album. And Mojo from the Wigglian Way, Mojo and Sparrow are the hosts over at the Wigglian Way, one of the absolute best podcasts in pagan podcasting, maybe in podcasting, period, as far as I know, has the lead vocals on this. I won't go so far as to say what Mojo was thinking about when he wrote this tune and sang it. It's not my place, but I like to play the songs and tell you how it makes me feel. And this song called Destiny by Chalice and Blade reminds me of the moment in my life where I had to cross that glowing line from Christian to not, where I had to face and look in the eye every consequence that had ever been told to me that would befall me if I left the, quote, true path, unquote. And this song reminds me of that moment as I walked across that line, understanding that I didn't have any other choice. I had to pursue where I had to go. And that required walking away not only from one God, but from a whole community of worshipers. Looking back at them, knowing that I was, in essence, dead to many of them. And wondering, would any of them miss me? And wondering, after I had crossed that line, am I dead now? Is this it? Because what I was taught, maybe different from yours, was not that I was going to hell. I was taught that if I walked away from God, when I died, there was simply not existence till the end of time. Now, that concept, in some ways, is a lot scarier than hellfire. At least if you're burning, you are conscious, sentient, and alive. You exist. You are an I. You are an identifiable being, not simply something that got erased from the universe. And somehow or another, this song puts me right there, remembering. And Mojo, pardon my colloquial swearing here. I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass on this, man, but there is something really strongly Neil Young in this tune and in your voice. And I don't mean that as anything more than a highest compliment. Neil Young is one of my favorite performers since I was a kid. Through the stuff he's done now, he's still at it. Few musicians in the world impress me as much as Neil Young. And I'm not saying you're any kind of a Neil Young clone in this, but there is something about this tune that, man, it evokes visions not only of my past, but the flavor that I get from some of the finest stuff that Neil Young ever did. So, Mojo, I know that Chalice and Blade is not together anymore, man, but I'm really looking forward to anything that you produce in the future. Please don't stop making music. You may have announced some music on your podcast I haven't caught up on. I'm about an episode and a half behind right now. So, man, love to hear some more stuff from you. In the meantime, I'll quit talking about it, and I'll play it. This is Chalice and Blade, and the name of the tune is Destiny.
Last night I paused and I know not why, to gaze out the window and wonder on this lonely night when I must die. Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
I will go with my head held high.
Oh, I will go
on this path laid before me.
Oh, before me.
I will go out with my head held high. It's my destiny. Thank you. clouds I see in the river that flows. The grass that bends and the wind that blows. The ones I love, surely they love me. Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
I will go with my head held high.
Oh, I will go
on this path laid before me.
Oh, before me.
I will go out with my head held high. It's my destiny. Time has come and I feel so weak. I shake and shiver, I can't even speak. One last long and final look. Will they miss me?
Will they miss me?
Will they miss me? I will go with my head held high.
Oh, I will go
on this path laid before me.
Oh, before me.
I will go out with my head held high. It's my destiny. It's my destiny.
Hello, my name is Dave the Bard, and I'm the host of Druidcast, the podcast of the Order of Bards, Ovates and Druids. Each month we present a wonderful selection of music, poetry and story, plus an interview or presentation by one of the leading teachers within the Western mystery traditions. In the past we've had Philip Cargon.
Mir Bashir, an Indian palmist, publishes a story called The Book of Shadows, which apparently Gardner got his idea for, rather than calling the book The Grimoire, he calls it The Book of Shadows and so on.
Professor Ronald Hutton.
Too often the horned god of nature can be turned into a simple force of hoof and horn and grain and grunt and thrust and lurch and armpits and the men's locker room, rather than of the intellect, the tongue with words, the speeder of thought, the creator of beautiful, delicate things.
Ellen Everett Hopman.
Hello, Helen.
Hello, and I'm sitting here in my oak forest in western Massachusetts.
In your oak forest. On
I live
phone.
In an oak forest, I do.
Oh, you really do?
I really do.
Oh, okay.
Timothy Freak.
And the Gnostics, I think, are particularly clear with it, or they speak to me very clearly, which is, here we are in this perpetual, ever-changing moment where the appearances are constantly changing, but something is present the same, consciousness itself. We have fallen into the mirror of life and identified with the appearance rather than what is witnessing.
Fionn Tulach.
One of the best pieces of advice I was ever given by a traditional storyteller was, don't tell a story unless you believe in it with every fibre of your being.
Christopher Hughes.
But I've often sort of heard as well that, you know, and especially of late, that Druidry is a celebratory tradition. And that's it. End of, full stop. But I quite disagree wholeheartedly that it's not just a celebratory tradition. Not only is it a way of life, it's a tradition that not only empowers and transforms, but is steeped in magic, steeped in a quality that supersedes any human concept.
So if you're a modern druid, Wiccan, witch, Celtic, Christian, pagan, or just interested in nature spiritualities, tune in to Druidcast each month. You can find us on iTunes or on our website at www.druidry.org.
Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take one.
A vampire and a druid walk into a bar.
And the Wiccan duck.
Oh, God. We're such geeks. Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take two.
All hail Caffeina in the name of the cup, the saucer, and the holy roast.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're recovered Catholics.
Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take three.
Children of the night, what music they make.
Is something caught in your throat? What's wrong with you?
Popcorn. Shadow Dance Podcast, promo take four?
I got nothing.
I'm not good at this whole promotional thing.
Neither am I.
Read, I write, I study way too much. Just kind of like all of you people listening out there.
Absolutely. So if you want to sit down and listen to some folks talk and then come up on the forums and talk back at us, we're going to be exploring
magic, Gen X, witchcraft, vampirism. We're just going to see if you can turn magic on its head and if it works right that way or how it works any which way.
And we're open to suggestions, so stop up to www.shadowdancepodcast.com and leave us some feedback. Listen to the show.
Right on, then.
All right. Carry on.
He's pounding down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done?
I'm Fox.
Hi, I'm Erwin.
And we're Pagan Parents on the Edge. Has your life been a little crazy lately?
Are you standing in line at the bank or the grocery store or DMV? Is your life really hectic lately?
Are the kids too loud? TV too loud? The world getting too loud?
Plug in your earbuds.
And make yourself your favorite beverage.
Join us for conversations about life, as seen from the experiences of two pagan parents.
You can catch us on iTunes, you can catch us at Podbean, you can catch us at Podcast Pickle, and you can catch us on MySpace, where we have a player that you can get the Pagan Parents on the Edge episodes.
We'd love to have you as a listener.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
Okay, well, I guess Destiny Turning on a Dime, that might not be the tune that line is from. I've been listening to a bunch of Chalice and Blade over the last day, so I'm going to have to find that tune and play that maybe on the next podcast. Mojo wrote me back, gave me permission to play their stuff, and there's at least three other tunes that I want to work into the podcast at some point. Now I'm going to go ahead and do another Journal of the Dragon Sun, which, if you haven't heard my podcast before, is me speaking to my young son, who's now approaching 18 months old, trying to leave behind pieces of me for him to understand in case, when he's an adult, he wants to find out more about his old man. This does, as a recent email brought to my attention, lead this whole podcast into an almost exhibitionist slash voyeuristic kind of venture. And believe me, I've been thinking about that myself. But there's so many things I wish in my life that my old man had talked to me about. And when I sit down and I think about the sort of conversations I wish I could have with him now that I'm 39, when he's not here anymore, well, they're the sort of things I'm going to bring up in my Journals to Dragon Son. Because he won't hear these things when he's young and inexperienced and not capable of understanding all of the adult concepts. I deal with some occasionally racy topics here, which he can find all about when he's old enough to find out about that, and if he chooses to. But one of the things I'm going to do, which I haven't done before, is read a piece out of a journal entry I wrote, a live journal That is a personal live journal of mine that some few friends have access to. I wrote it over a year ago when I was on the road and working. This was the last travel job that I had. I was trying very desperately to get away from traveling for a living. I've spent a good 15 years of my life ready to pack my computer and my kit and go. St. Louis, Louisville, Chicago, Seattle, wherever I was needed, New York, Newark. There was always another city with another factory that needed on-site help. That, however, was leading me, son, away from you and your mother far too much. Especially once you were born, I began to understand that my physical presence was going to be as important to you as my love for you. My presence as a father figure was going to be very necessary, especially, son, for your particular kind of personality. So I'm going to read to you this piece that I wrote. It is what I had finished my last road assignment up until this point. This was about going on a year and a half ago, and maybe a year ago, and it was entitled, I Lost This Engagement. 4 o'clock in the morning, and my shoulders are only now starting to unkink. I just climbed out of my car after 650 miles in the saddle straight through from St. Louis. It has been possibly the worst 48 hours of my career. My wife and child are out at her mother's this evening, so I'm lighting up some kind incense and writing of my incorrectly performed automotive industry jutsu. I was supposed to be riding this cherry contract through the end of the year. I had gotten this job as a reward. I had been part of a team that did a previous project for Chrysler, and Chrysler had specifically told management that they wanted the same team on this new project. It's a fairly straightforward project with the latest and greatest automation technology that got crammed into a ridiculously unreasonable timeline that the team managed to pull off in spades. When we shipped that machine, I had a good feeling in my gut. I knew we would have a few minor bugs that would only show themselves once we were in production, but all in all, this was going to be 50 hours a week to babysit and lightly tweak this piece of automation till New Year's. Yay, overtime! It has been years since I had the pleasure to truly feel confident when I shipped a machine. This industry is always in such a hurry, you're expected to finish the machine in the field, on the fly, while the plant is running full production. Good luck and God's help you if you fail. If you pull it off, they might consider you for another project. It is also known in the industry parlance as, quote, being thrown to the wolves, unquote. So far, I have several wolf pelts. But this project was going so well. I got along well with my robot programmer, my machine builder, and both my project manager and the Chrysler engineer I was supposed to be working with. Good team, good machine, wife and child coming down to stay with me from mid-September through December. Everything groovy. Apparently Aris decided I had been handed a far too ordered project and spun the wheel. I have been in the business of industrial automation engineering for about 16 years now. A good 12 of those years have been spent on automotive projects. I have worked in dozens of projects and worked with hundreds of union employees and engineers and managers. I have never been thrown out of a plant by a union or plant management. Until Monday. A little background. This plant is on the chopping block. Everyone in the place knows the place is 95% certain to be closed in the next 6 months. That means you don't do anything to the machinery without calling over the correct tradesperson, if you are a vendor. You then direct them as to the work that you need performed on the machine. Then you wait, and their tradespeople perform the work. I have never violated that policy. I got along well with every tradesperson on the installation. Being personable to the union guys is part of my job. They need to understand that I'm not there to take their work away. I make sure they know I am just there to finish the final debug and that I will train them to troubleshoot the machine so they can keep it running when I leave. If you explain that to the union guys and gals, overall, they're a nice bunch of people to work with. Production started last week on this project. The entire crew of tradespeople had been juggled around over this last weekend. I didn't see any faces I recognized on Monday, except for the line operators. About an hour and a half into my day, I suddenly had a guy standing nose to nose with me and demanding to know where the electrician assigned to my area was. He smelled like union, so I politely told him that my project had not yet been assigned a union electrician. By the way, a union's electrician's assignments are dictated by the plant and union, not by me. He demanded to know who started the machine in the morning if we didn't have an electrician. Unfortunately, my robot operator, being a little less seasoned than me, told the truth and said that he pushed the three buttons that started the machine in the morning, but that was it. Now, I wouldn't have lied to the union person, but I would have kept my mouth shut and played stupid. That's what you do. Unfortunately, my robot programmer, well, he wasn't as seasoned. And when he let it out of the bag that he started the machine in the morning, I knew trouble was coming. The union guy told me that I was not allowed to be there without an electrician. His demeanor spoke volumes. He was looking for a fight. He was looking for an excuse to get me thrown out of the plant. This was not the first time this has happened to me. I tend to enjoy it if I see it coming, and I could see this guy coming from a mile away. So I always manage to avoid the kind of retribution that would get me thrown out of a plant. I smile and explain my position politely. I ask if I've broken a union rule I'm not familiar with. And at the end of the conversation, I always tell them to have a nice day. It drives them crazy. The last time I did that, the last guy started screaming at me about how fucking dare I tell him what kind of fucking day to have. Well, that was actually just delicious. The man was actually raving. Suddenly, weeks' worth of rumors I had been picking up both through management and the tradesman grapevine made sense. For weeks, the most credible rumors claimed that the skilled trades layoffs were coming any day now. Skilled trades in an automotive plant, as a side caveat, are people like electricians, pipe fitters, and machine builders. And here was this big, angry, uncomfortably frustrated electrician I had never met, demanding that I have a Chrysler electrician. I shall call this angry white ex-jock Tubby, scared out of his mind about getting laid off, three kids at home and a mortgage guy, Skippy. It amuses me to call him such. This was a sweep. The layoffs of skilled trades must have begun. That means I just got hit in a sweep by the union designed to get as many contractors as possible thrown out of the building. Skippy was fighting hard for a way to get me off the floor. I wonder if he got his quota that day. I smiled politely and explained that I did not have the management authority at Chrysler to assign myself an electrician. Furthermore, it was not my responsibility to locate the union electrician. It was the union's responsibility to supply the electrician. If he would like, I had the Chrysler facilities manager's cell phone number. But if he could contact the union and get an electrician assigned to the machine, I would be happy to work with him. In the meantime, I would refrain from pushing the three buttons that started the machine and keep my robot programmer from pushing those buttons in the morning if that violated union rules. This was not what Skippy expected. I don't think they train these young guys how to handle the very extremely polite and helpful attitude in response to their verbal assaults. Skippy got flustered and stalked off. 10 minutes later, Skippy shows back up with an older, trimmer version of himself, shouting that my robot guy and I disconnect our computers and that we better fucking move away from the machine. I shall call this desperate white guy who stank of fear and union fever, inspired by that fear, Bushy. Bushy, because he had a really impressive set of whiskers. And it amuses me. Okay, whatever. Keep the peace. I'm getting paid by the hour. Just keep smiling. Move your computer away from the machine and keep smiling. Now the facilities manager comes over. I'm not even going to describe the headache it is to work with this guy sometimes, but that's another story. I shall call this engineering facilities manager engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin. Not because it amuses me, but because it describes him very well. Bushy starts yelling at engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin about how he is supposed to have an electrician with me at all times, blah blah. I keep quietly moving my table, chair, and computer away from the machinery. Now I fully understand my dilemma. Engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin is getting his ass chewed for not doing what I had told him to do weeks previously. He never bothered to make the request to get my project assigned a union electrician. It suddenly occurs to Bushy that he has been distracted from his initial mission. He knows he can't get engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin thrown out. So he stops yelling at him, turns his head, sees me, and starts screaming at me that I haven't shut off my computer yet. I kept the smile on. I have already disconnected all my cables, moved my desk and computer away from the machine. I have done everything Bushy asked of me and did it with a smile. He never once asked me to shut my laptop off. Bushy starts to steam. I realize that smiling and politeness won't get me out of this. I have just become his personal passion of the day. An engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin is about to throw me under the bus to get the union off his back. I make the only counter move I can make. I look Bushy in the eye and politely say, "I have done everything you asked. If you want me to shut off my computer, I will. I'm happy to stand here never touching the machine in any way and wait for the electrician to show up." Well, my jutsu was not strong enough. I was directed to leave the plant. There's a certain sense of liberation to getting kicked out. There was an opportunity here. I was getting thrown out, and nothing I could do could stop it. I could finally open up my mouth and tell these idiots precisely what I thought of them and their pathetic kind. But I had to make it quick. Skippy and Bushy stood there looking at me smugly. Their tiny, panicky little brains were thinking they'd scored back at the evil, scary, non-union world. I looked at all three of them and said in my very best high school drama voice projection technique, where you can hear me all the way in the back rows, "No wonder the Japanese are kicking our ass. We Americans just stand around screaming at each other all day long instead of getting the goddamn job done." Then I theatrically strode off stage left to the exit. It was a little awkward to stride theatrically while carrying my folding table, folding chair, portable printer in a box, and loaded computer backpack, but I think I pulled it off. I did tell Bushy to have a nice day as I headed for the exit. For the second time in my life, it worked. Bushy started screaming something about that motherfucker better fucking not tell me what kind of fucking day to have as I walked away. Priceless. I couldn't help the smirk on my face at that point. I won't bore you with the further details. I swear upon all gods and goddesses that the reason given by the union to management to have me thrown out of the plant was as follows. Quote, "He has a smart-ass attitude." Unquote. I shit you not. It went as far as one of the VPs of my company having a phone call with the Chrysler plant management. the union would not budge. I had apparently really pissed off Bushy. And Bushy, as it turns out, is a very highly placed UAW plant committee member. Bushy doesn't like it when peons dare speak up. And when peons tell him to have a nice day, Bushy gets positively apoplectic. I was now attempting to roll with the punch. I napped most of the rest of Monday, fired up Monster, updated my job profile, and poured myself a few drinks. Tuesday, I was supposed to line up my replacement with the details and drive home. Instead, I spent 8 hours trying to get my replacement's laptop to work with the newest version of our software specs. Before I left, I lost my wallet. Found it, only to discover while looking for my wallet I'd lost my keys. Found my keys. This all took 2 hours. Then I drove home. But on the way, I had several interesting phone conversations. The engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin called me in a panic multiple times. He apparently is panicky because my perfectly good replacement engineer doesn't know how to work the new automation platform technology. The safety system itself is pretty new, and not many guys know how to use it. I am one of the few. For you geeks out there, think of the quantum leap of moving from the old-style hydraulic airplane controls to the modern fly-by-wire plane controls. This new project was fly-by-wire. Most programmers only know how to deal with the old hydraulic controls, if you want to stretch the metaphor. So, engineering wannabe in need of Ritalin's whole world is falling down. I enjoyed telling him it was a shame I got kicked out of the plant, because I just really would love to help him. Chuckle. Good luck. Click. My 10-hour drive turned into 13-hour drives, because many parts of I-90, I-80, and I-94 were closed because of flooding. Detours are slow. I should have taken the Indianapolis route instead of the Chicago route. Well, son, that's just a little slice out of the diary of your old man. And just to give you a taste of some of the stuff he used to put up with to make a living. Now, right now, I'm working very hard and making sure I don't have to do that sort of thing anymore. And for any of you out there who are worried about my job situation, yeah, I'm still laid off. But I had a very interesting phone interview on Monday. I can't tell you who the company is. I know who it is, but it's a confidential interview. One of the largest corporations in the United States had their own internal HR department contact me about becoming an executive-level engineer in charge of the automation systems for their central warehouse distribution systems. Me, as an executive, makes me almost want to giggle. I'm the kind of guy with the long hair, the jeans, the comfortable t-shirt or sweater, banging away on a keyboard on a floor. I'm really not the kind of guy you normally picture in a suit, well manicured and a nice tie. Though, you know, hey, if the pay is good enough and it means I get to come home every night to see my family, I just may become a corporate animal yet. Who knows? Well, I'm going to play the last tune for you today. This one is called The Last Watch. It's by Tree of Shadows off their Pause album. Again, I don't really have either the authority or understanding of exactly what the singer and the writer and the band was thinking about when they produced this tune, but I'll tell you how it makes me feel. There's a lot of interests out there in the spirit world. A lot of people and things paying attention to what happens on this planet, and probably hundreds of thousands of others. But for some reason, there are more than a few interests that keep a close eye on what happens on this planet, in this plane, in this time. I don't know why, but I've bumped into one or two of them in my day, and this song reminds me very much of one I bumped into once. He's been here a long time, and Somehow or another, this tune reminds me of the guy I met, if you want to call him a guy. It's been here a long time. It's been a long, lonely assignment. And I wish him the best. And I hope that at the end of his sojourn looking after this place, he finds nothing but peace, happiness, and a lot of fun. Here's the track, The Last Watch.
Still I stand and bear my waves and fall.